If you would like to support the podcast and get some extra content while you're there, head on over to patreon.com/severeMMApodcast and sign up. From the rewatch to the Q&A, we will have loads of content every week. So sign up, patreon.com/severeMMApodcast. And now, here's the podcast.
Graham McDonald is an idiot.
Sean Sheehan of severeMMA.com. He even has the audacity to call himself the quote-unquote pod god.
This is Severe MMA.
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 The Severe MMA podcast is finally here.
Welcome to the Severe MMA podcast. Here's your host, Sean Sheehan.
Welcome, welcome, everybody. It's episode 460 of the Severe MMA podcast. My name is Sean Sheehan, a.k.a. the Pod God, the Scoring Lord, the Quiz Master, the World Champion Quizzer. Joined today by the Ahmad Diallo of Irish MMA Media, Graham McDonald. I don't think there's no prize for guessing that one today, Graham. How are you?
I thought it might be the Queeving Gallagher after those goals conceded today, but yeah.
Great. Just a brief recap, Graham. Great win for Man United, the better side.
You tuned out halfway through. If your messages are to be believed,
I tuned out at halftime and tuned back in. Yeah.
I was watching. Conveniently there when they were winning, and you were tuned out if they lost.
No, I tuned out at halftime. I was watching some vines. There were some people around, and then I tuned back in. But yeah, great day for Man United. Do you know what the best thing about it is? Right, it like prolongs Man United season, because if they lost today, it was over. Like, and it's that was that.
Well, so. I don't know. Have you not seen the results going recently? Fulham absolutely destroyed Spurs.
Man United as well.
Villa can't buy a win at the moment. I don't know. And now that fifth spot, Davey Moyes has come like a phoenix out of the flames and put the fifth place back in the English league. Even if that was to happen,
it'd be a Cinderella run and it'd be brilliant anyway, you know. So
no, it's only about 6 points or something, is it? 5 or 6 points, something like that, against teams that are struggling. I don't know. Like, it obviously you're gonna need to get a couple of vital wins, but from where it was looking all season, it's definitely you know, the teams that are maybe not used to being there, like Villa and Spurs, are feeling the pressure, and it'll be a bottle job at this stage if you don't swim in there.
Oh, a clapple job. Is it a clapping job?
We can't rely on Eric getting the fifth, so we had to give him the FA Cup just to keep him in the job. Sir Jim Ratcliffe reasons to keep Eric on board.
I love that you're getting the excuses in early. Poor old cop.
We've already lost the game now, so I'm getting the excuses in post-match.
Must have been terrible. The young Man United team, little 19 and 20 year olds out in the pitch towards the end for Man United. They've eaten the billion dollar bottle jobs of Liverpool.
Which 19 and 20 year olds were out on the pitch at the end of the game?
The two that scored the goal.
Wasn't there at the end of the game. He'd been sent off.
Oh yeah, sorry, let's go back. 10 minutes, we beat you with 10 minutes.
How did Bruno not get sent off? What's going on? Like, what's going on? That PGMOL, they're trying to hand 115 FD the title again.
How sick is it that like, and look, I truly acknowledge that Liverpool will go and probably beat Man United about 5-0 in 2 weeks' time, but we'll leave that aside for a second. But like, what a Klopp's last big moment against Man United will be probably Man United's best win against him. That must tart, like.
His last moment. He has to play Man United now. So, yeah, hopefully, you know, it's been a 0-0 and then a win for you guys in the last two. So that's very poor, you know. Obviously, very wasteful in possession, sloppy performance all around. Even when we were on top of his, when we were winning 2-1, we were just so slow in our play. It was just like, I think everybody looked tired, but like, you know, I don't know. This break has nearly come at a good time in some ways, but in other ways, you know, Liverpool kind of maybe are a little bit slow to get back to rhythm after they come off these couple of week breaks.
I know, this analysis.
No, so, like, no, you know, it could work out if we can get people fit, but yeah.
Crying.
You know, it's at least now, hopefully, I don't know when these fixtures are scheduled for the cup games, but hopefully they're at awkward times for 115 FC.
Yeah. Taking it well, so you've taken it better than I thought. You know, you only kind of quarter blame the referee. You mostly blame the goalkeeper.
I've been around for, you know, many a a manager, and I was there for Roy Hodgson. So I've come to accept, you know, you can't win them all. But it's been a good run. It's going to be sad to see Klopp go. I know you think it's all a big,
and I have said it since day one.
All a big pantomime thing, and he's going to pop out and be like, "Only joking." Yeah. But I don't think so. But it's going to be probably a couple of years of transition for Liverpool. So hopefully we can, you know, get the Premier League title this year. But yeah, it's hard to know. Like, you know, we're relying on the results at this stage. So hopefully, you know, probably a draw between Arsenal and Man City will be ideal.
You're joined top with Arsenal, aren't you? So like,
well, yeah, we're six or seven goals behind.
I actually do think you're being funny enough.
If they beat City, then their fixtures aren't very difficult. So, yeah, it's kind of out of our hands at the moment, but it could be back in our hands very quickly.
Yeah, I all jokes aside, I actually do think you'll win it. So that's terrible. But anyway.
Well, we need to get Alisson fit. Like, he needs to be back in this 2 weeks because, you know, we got away with Kelleher, great number two or whatever, all that. So I know he's Irish. People are looking on from this side, from here, obviously, hoping he'll be good, and he has done well. But this pushing the ball into your, parrying the ball into your own six-yard box, like we had this problem with Mignolet before where he just kept palming the ball into the box for easy tap-ins and, you know, not moving his feet before diving. And Kelleher's, like, he did that twice today with the not moving his feet before diving on slow shots.
And
he did
the parry
into the box. So,
come on.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously, I think we need Alisson fit for this run.
Yeah, who cares? Okay. St. Patrick's Day, what a great day. We better move on. We better talk. Great day for Man United to
even a broken clock is right twice a day.
Seven goals again, Graham. I think that's
it's 7-0, but you'll take it anyway. Obviously, any kind of win, you probably would have taken a close loss if I had offered to see it before the game.
Definitely. 100% without a shadow of a doubt.
So yeah, everything's a bonus for you guys.
That's seven goal. That's what I'm calling a 7-goal win for Man United. Anyway, St. Patrick's Day. Let's talk about Irish MMA because the big MMA of this week is going to be on in Ireland as the Belfast Bellator Super Series Champion Series comes along in Belfast, and it's a very interesting card. You're heading up, Graham, aren't you? Are you looking forward to this card? It's turned out to be a pretty good card, and there's a lot of very good fights, and probably one of the best cards Bellator have put on so far. What's the anticipation levels for you as we're, 4 or 5 days out here?
Yeah, I like the card. I'm actually not heading up, but I believe Quilcha is. But it's some very good fights in the card. Obviously, you know, when a big fight falls, or when they change the big fight from James Gallagher Jeremy Kenny versus James Gallagher to Pitbull, you were kind of thinking, oh, is James going to, you know, go from the main event to kind of bury on the card? But he's got a great fight that has been, you know, talked about for a long time, and that would be a huge victory for either guy in Higo. So I'm looking forward to that one a lot. There's obviously Kieran Clark's on the card. He's a big favorite. You know, he's kind of maybe would have been hoping for a bit of a better opponent, you know. But, you know, you take what you're given and you have to go out there and get it done. And this will be a big, big chance for Maffey to steal a lot of thunder as well. Obviously, Nathan Kelly's coming back and, you know, Fabian Edwards in there in a really good fight as well. That's a hard fight. And obviously, Carl Moore against Corey Anderson. Carl Moore, like, he kind of disappeared off the face of the earth and, you know, had some injuries and came back, you know, against Carl Albertson and looked phenomenal. And he's got a couple of wins since then. And, you know, he's got a huge opportunity against Corey Anderson, who was a high-ranked guy in the UFC before he voluntarily left. And he's still, you know, if Carl Marco went there and win, it'd be the biggest win of his career. He's kind of been on the cusp of, you know, really big things before. And this is kind of, you know, another shot where maybe he's a little bit more ready than he was the first time when he went for the double champ status in Cage Warriors. So there's definitely some very interesting fights on this card. And, you know, I'm probably forgetting some nice matchups because, I think it's a pretty good card considering, you know, the scheduled main event they had fell off as well. It's definitely a really, really good card. Obviously, Sinead and Leah was meant to happen, but isn't happening now.
Yeah, I think, first of all, that's, you know, that's obviously a big part of it. The Sinead versus Leah fight was going to be one of the biggest fights on it, and that falling off is definitely a blow. But normally, you know, that sort of fight falling off one of the old Bellator cards would be a fatal blow, but it's not in this one, I think, because the card is so good. So that's like, that's a real good sign for the card. It's bad for the card, obviously, as we know, but it's a real good sign for the card in general. I think, I agree with you. I think it's a really, really, really good card. I think for Bellator to come to Ireland as well for their first card is really meaningful as well, because Ireland has been the place for Bellator over the last while. Obviously, you know, more Dublin than Belfast, as we know, but still, I think the fact that they were planning to put on the Leo fight, as you mentioned, Graham, they have Carl Moore in a title fight here, who's from obviously from up the north as well. I think it was, you know, and we've talked about Belfast for how far away the stuff it is, and how, you know, we know Dublin people want travel, and in people down the country as well, it's hard to get that. But for the people in Belfast and people up in Ulster, Northern Ireland, it's obviously massive for them, and for the, you know, the local travelling fans, I suppose. Like, you mentioned Kieran Clark as well, like, his fans will travel. I'd say it's similar enough distance from Dublin for his fans, and or you know, maybe even handier to get there as well. So it's massive for all of them. Let's get into it, maybe fight by fight, and let's talk about the main event, Corey Anderson versus Carl Moore. I think, you know, you mentioned about Carl being away from MMA for a while, coming back for us. You know, obviously, Carl took a bit of an exception to it. We're saying we don't know what he's going to look like when he comes back. But, like, how could anyone know? But he came back and he looked absolutely fantastic. But you know one thing I would say, right? That we almost cut Carl's career in half from before that, the comeback, to after the comeback. And I think he deserves credit for both of them. And he maybe only gets credit for, like, after the comeback. Like, his career before the comeback, you'd nearly forget at times, he was the Cage Warriors light heavyweight champion. He went up and he fought Mauro Sorelli, who's a very good heavyweight. He lost that fight, okay. But before that, like, he was on an unbelievable run. He was,
yeah, his only loss was to Paul Craig in Dublin. And that was a really competitive fight until, you know, Paul Craig got the submission, which we've seen him do so many times in the UFC against really good guys. So, like, you know, there's no shame in that. They're both early on in their pro careers. I believe it was 5-0 versus 6-0. And then, you know, moving up to heavyweight is how he lost when he was trying to unify the belt. So, yeah, you know, he's got a phenomenal record, and it probably stands to him. His record stands to him in terms of, you know, getting this title shot this early. He said himself in an interview, I think he did with the Ultra Angle lads, that he was a little bit surprised, but he's obviously delighted to get the opportunity. And yeah, as I said, it's, even though he was trying to become the double champion in Cage Warriors, you could argue that this is a bigger fight for him. And if he beats Corey Anderson, as I said, a guy who was ranked in the UFC and very competitive at, you know, a high level in the UFC, that would be an absolutely phenomenal win, and arguably the biggest win of his career.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. Like, and the reason I bring this up is because, you know, we talk an awful lot about how a fighter gets to a certain place. And, you know, some people, you know, they have their few fights to start their career. They get into an organization, maybe they win a few big fights, and they're there then. But I think for Carl Moore, you know, he's done it in a sort of way that we almost forget the first build he's had in his career, do you know? Like, he has had that big build up to the Cage Warrior style. He has had that build up to going for a second Cage Warrior style. Everyone was talking at the time about him being, you know, the next McGregor, or him being the first guy since McGregor to win the two titles in a row. And that brings a certain pressure with it and all. Then, you know, obviously the big injury issues that he had a long time out, and the fact that he can build up again. What about that, Graham? Like, that mental part of it. That's a huge side of it as well. Like, we look at Carl at the moment and we see the ability he has. I mean, we'll talk about his ability in a second. But, like, the mentality to be able to come back, having already climbed up, having already had this big build-up to, like, you're going to win this fight and you're going to go to the UFC. It didn't work out. You're out for years upon years. And to have to come back and build that way again, that must be so tough mentally.
Yeah, you know, and he mentioned on that interview with the Ultra Angle lads that he was, you know, working as a bouncer, and, you know, he was so close to, you know, being a double champion, on the verge of signing for the UFC, the next big thing, you know, all that stuff. And then all of a sudden you lose and you're working as a bouncer to get by, and you're thinking, you know, what happened here? You know, how did this kind of change so quickly, and you know, injuries, and we've seen fighters recently talk about the kind of like the mental game, the depression, all that stuff of, you know, not having a fight to work towards, and you know, after losing a fight or even after winning a fight, just not knowing, you know, when your next fight is and things like that. It's difficult. And when you, I mean, you mix in injuries, you mix in, you know, how close he was and having to kind of go back and start again nearly, as we said. And, you know, he came back and it was a split decision against Lee Chadwick, a really tough guy. And then he took another, or he came back after the Cage Warriors win. So he wasn't coming off a loss. He wasn't like dwelling on that. But, you know, he took nearly three years off. Came back, looked phenomenal, and you know, if you're looking at his recent run, yeah, he definitely deserves this shot. You know, Corey Anderson is obviously a difficult matchup for everybody, but Carlos Anderson, everybody, everywhere he can hit hard on the feet. His boxing is better than it's ever been, in my opinion. Obviously, his ground game was his go-to back in the day, and is still there to fall back on. And you know, I think he's a smarter fighter than he's ever been, and yeah, I think he's much more ready than he was when he was, you know, champion in Cage Warriors, going for the second belt. But it is a big ask again. I know he accepted to me saying it was a big ask coming back against Carl Albrechtsen, but it's a big ask against Corey Anderson. But the rewards are also huge.
Of course, if it wasn't a big ask, it wouldn't be a big achievement. So I don't know, you know.
Yeah,
so
exactly. Yeah.
People take that as a slight, but it's not. It's just a fact. Like if you win fucking 10 fights in a row and a big ask, that just makes you a fucking exceptional fighter with a great CV. But there's no doubt about it. And I think as well, a big difference between Carl and some other fighters is it feels like Carl doesn't have the hype. And it kind of goes with the point I was just making about the career being cut in half. Like sometimes, like in fairness now, we do build fighters up, and even, you know, maybe people in the UK that build their fighters up, maybe to even more what they are. But for some reason, Carl hasn't been that. And I made a video, it was a few months ago now, like just going through the Bellator light heavyweight division. And there was no doubt about it that Carl Moore deserved the shot. Like, even when Nimkov was the champion, like, Carl Moore was the obvious next number one contender. Like, he's earned his way there. He beat Polizzi, who's right up towards the top five or top six at the time in the rankings. Everyone else above had their shot because of, obviously, the tournament and everything that had happened. He beat Albrechtsen, who was ranked as well. And it just made total sense. And he done it in a pretty impressive way. Plus, he has, you know, the being Irish part, plus he has the, you know, them coming back to Belfast part as well. And it just made absolute total sense. So, you know, I'm sure there will be a bit of it this week, like saying, oh, an Irish guy, he's been given the chance and all. But it's not the case at all. If you look at the facts straight up, you know, Carl Moore absolutely deserves this. He's earned it throughout his career. And to put all of those things together, I think it means he's ready. Like, that doesn't mean I think he's going to win or going to lose or anything like that, but he's ready for this opportunity. Like, to go through all of what he's gone through in his career, with the ups and downs and the injuries and the comebacks and the earning your place, to be, you know, we look at him now, what is he, 14 fights into his career. You know, how often recently have we seen fighters who are like maybe 8-2 or, you know, 6-8-0 and they lose a fight, and we just kind of say, you know, he just wasn't ready. Give him another year. Give him another 2 years. Build his way up a little bit. And, you know, invariably it either happens or it doesn't happen. And for Carl Moore, it has happened. He's one of those guys who needed that time, like everyone. He's taken the time, had the fights, and got his place here. And it's, you know, it's exciting. It must be so exciting to know all that as well, to know that you have put in all that effort and you got to the moment of your career at the right moment. Like, and you're going in there against Corey Anderson, who's going to be a very, very tough matchup. What about that matchup, Graham, and Corey Anderson? Like, 17-6. I suppose it's not like he's been on a massive run over the last while, but apart from Nimkov, you know, he's beaten everyone in Bellator since he's gone over there, and looked pretty good doing it after having a very good record in the UFC. For people who might know, Corey Anderson might be only tuning in for Carl Moore, listen to their local Irish MMA podcast, tell him a little bit about Corey Anderson. Tough matchup, very good fight.
Yeah, you know, in the UFC, he has wins over Glover Teixeira, you know, Johnny Walker, you know, he's beaten Ryan Bader, Phil Davis in Bellator. And, you know, he's looked good. Obviously, it's very difficult to look good against Phil Davis, no matter who's fighting Phil Davis. But he got the win there in his last one. Obviously, you mentioned the Nemkov one. And, you know, that was obviously a rematch of an accidental clash of heads. So that was a bit of a, you know, a bit of a delay there in terms of, you know, fighting fresh opponents. And, you know, obviously for Corey Anderson, he's been in the UFC, you know, obviously he's motivated, but is he as motivated as Carl Moore is for this? You know, this is a huge opportunity for Carl. Obviously Corey Anderson's like a consummate professional from everything you can see, and he definitely is, I doubt he's slacking off, but sometimes, you know, that little bit of wanting it more can come into it. And I think, you know, Carl's gotta get his hands going early, and he's gotta make it a difficult, dirty fight. He's gotta put it on Corey and make him respect his hands. And, you know, Corey's, you know, maybe gonna try and turn to wrestling if things don't go well. But, you know, Carl's a big guy, and he's a good grappler. So, you know, he definitely has possibilities to, you know, get back to his feet, or you know, potentially even, you know, get a finish there. But obviously Corey Anderson's a very difficult man to finish as well. So it's a difficult matchup. It's a difficult matchup for both guys. You know, Carl Moore is a big guy who hits hard, and you know, if you get hit with one of those punches, it can change a fight, even if he's not putting you away. And he obviously has the ability to put you away as well. So I think both guys have you know, multiple methods of victory here. And I see some close rounds as well, and yeah, this is one that could go either way. And it's difficult for me to imagine how it's going to look.
Yeah, I think it's, look, a lot of time with the heavier weight classes, it comes down to the you know, the the singular bigger moments, I suppose. Although your point there about there possibly being close rounds, I actually tend to agree with that as well. It could be you know, someone could get knocked out or get submitted in a round or in the fifth round or something. We never know. But I think, like, the way Corey Anderson fights is he fights behind his jab. He tries to land that big shot over the top and knock you out. Or, as you said, if that doesn't work, go for a takedown, get on top, very dominant on top. And he is, I think, wrestled a lot more in Bellator as well than, you know, than he had previously, or made a point of it, I think. So, like, Carl is not 100% different. Carl likes to be, like, it's funny for Carl, who is such a big muscular guy, how kind of you know, what with the amount of finesse, I suppose, he does fight with, and he looks for that shot rather than just going out. Maybe, you know, maybe someone who doesn't have as good a fight IQ might blow himself out trying to look for that big shot, where he just kind of waits for it to come and then takes it. Whether, you know, you could be three rounds down or four rounds down, and it appears in the fourth or fifth round, you just, you know, as long as you're ready to take it. Now, I'm not saying necessarily that'll be his game plan, but I'm saying that's a possibility. Plus, as you mentioned, on the ground, like, he's a very, very dangerous grappler. Like, he mentioned to the lads on the old triangle as well that, you know, the greater possibility of a takedown, I suppose, comes from Corey Anderson, and Carl want to get back up and fight like that as well. But there is, like, the initial thought, from a biased Irish side, is that, oh, Anderson's just going to come out and he's going to try to take him down. But thinking about it a little bit more, I think this is going to be predominantly a striking matchup, unless there is, you know, maybe someone gets knocked down and someone jumps down on top of him, or like it goes into like a bit of a brawl at some stage and someone dips down under and goes for a takedown or something like that. I think Anderson is going to strike with Carl, and I think he's going to bank on maybe his speed over the power maybe of Carl, and trust his power as well, because Anderson is a very, very powerful guy. And, you know, that game plan could absolutely work. But I think the first time he feels the power of Carl, I don't think he'll start going for takedowns, but I do think he'll be a little bit more, defensive is the wrong word, but maybe offensively thoughtful, if you want to put it that way. I think he's going to try to use that speed more and try to stay on the outside more and try to maybe control the fight more on the feet rather than taking a few chances. Now, if the speed does work and he doesn't feel the power, maybe it is not necessarily all out attack, but is more offensive than you know, than careful. So it's interesting to see how that works out. Like, if you're to take that as something that's going to happen, Carl Corey is going to strike with him. I think for Carl Moore, and this was the kind of the first point I made as well, I think being, offensively smart is the best thing you can do here. Make him pay. Make sure to make him pay early as well, because if he gets into some sort of rhythm and he can kind of control the fight on the feet without getting hit, that's going to be a hard rhythm to get out of. So, like, hurt him early and often if he gives you the opportunity, if you're Carl Moore, and then you can change the fight in your way, because when that happens too, you're going to be able to maybe see the takedown coming or see the change that Corey Anderson does more easily. Then you can stop it, and then you can up the amount that you're doing on the feet afterwards as well. So I think this is going to have to be a very smart game plan for Carl Moore and very well executed, because, you know, you would think that Anderson maybe has the speed advantage. You know, the power is probably just about the Carl Moore, but similar enough. I actually think Anderson has underrated power. You know, he doesn't have a whole load of knockouts. He's a good few knockouts as well, you know, maybe half his wins or whatever, but for the bigger weight, it's not as big as most people. And I think the wrestling is a funny one because of how good Carl's grappling is. Like, a wrestling advantage might not necessarily be an advantage, so we'll see how that works out. But I'm fascinated by this fight. I think it's a very, very, very tough fight for Carl Moore, but at the same time, if he fights the way he can fight and the way he has shown in recent fights that he can fight, you know, a horses for courses type of fight, it's winnable too. I think it is very winnable. Is there anything I left out there, Graham, or any other part of that fight that you'd like to touch on before we move on? Because I think it's a fascinating one, because we don't often see maybe technical matchups at the light heavyweight division, especially in Bellator. Yeah. This could be one.
You know, when people see two big guys, they probably think, oh, somebody's going to get knocked out here, and it could happen. But both guys, you know, Carl Moore's been to a few decisions, even over five rounds. You know, you may look at him and think, oh, you're carrying all that muscle. If you can get him into the later rounds, you might be able to, you know, wear him out and overwhelm him. But we've seen him be able to hold up and win late rounds and important late rounds in the past. So, yeah, as I said, this fight could go a number of ways. Both guys have, you know, multiple methods of victory, and you know, it could be a big moment that swings it, or it could be a really, really a series of really, really close rounds. And you know, obviously the crowd is going to be a factor as well. You know, the crowd is going to be going mad for Carl. You know, obviously up in Belfast and his first, you know, huge main event, that obviously support their own. And Corey's going in against a guy though, and Corey Anderson, who's been in those big events and he's been in those huge fights. So yeah, maybe it won't play as much of a factor maybe as we've seen in the past in terms of Bellator events and guys coming to fight Irish guys in main events.
Yeah, I'm interested, because something like a lot of people say that, don't they? But then, you know, they get there and it's a little bit different. We've heard it from many. I think Aaron Pico was one recently. He's like, oh, well, this Irish crowd is not going to be loud. I've fought in front of big crowds before. And they were like, well, actually, you know, that was a little bit different. I do think this will be as well. They'll be absolutely ravenous. And I think there might be a little bit of an advantage for Carl, the fact that the Sinead Kavanagh, Liam McCourt fight isn't on it. Because, like, let's be honest, that fight was probably going to be a three-round drag-a-mouse type of fight where it was loud for, you know, the whole 3 rounds. Like, if anyone was at that first fight, it was a very, very unique sort of fight that at home you mightn't think it was the greatest fight in the world, but there in the venue, it was very, very different. That, almost certainly probably would have happened again. You have James Gallagher on this, but James is going to be a few fights down the card as well. So by the time it gets to the main event, they won't have had, a local guy. Well, although, you know, Strabane's not that local to Belfast, but you know what I mean? An Ulsterman, let's put it that way, on the card. So I think that could be a big, big advantage to him too. And I there's no doubt about it, the crowd is going to...
You know, and there is a three, you know, non-Irish fight gap between James Gallagher and Carl Moore. Obviously there's like Fabian Edwards, who's, you know, fought a lot of times in Ireland, and, you know, other guys who fought in Ireland as well, and Tim Wilde, who's been on the regional scene for a long time. But, you know, the Irish fans, some of them will be there just to support the Irish, and that three fight lull, yeah, you know, maybe they'll be recharged and ready to go for the Carl fight. But Yeah, I think maybe I was expecting James to be a little bit higher on the card, and maybe the Tim Wild fight being
that might change too. You never know.
I don't know. Sometimes the listings do end up changing, but to me, I would have thought that James would be a little bit higher up the card.
Like the time we tuned in for the Kiefer Crosby fight, and hours before. hopefully Bellator a bit better this time. Let's touch on that James fight while we're at it. I think it's a much better fight than the Jeremy Kennedy fight. I think it makes a lot more sense. I talked to James last week. It'll be out this week over in Sherdog, and he's an interview over in the Ultra Angle as well this week. Make sure to tune in and see that. But like, Higo is a very good fighter who's been around for a long time. They've kind of been, you know, that name with James and with some of the other fighters has been, you know, talked about for a long time. And I think it's about time one of them, I suppose. And James is the guy. Like, James's fight, his last fight, it wasn't his best fight in the world by any means, but he got over the line. He got the split decision after being out for nearly 2 years, after that patchy mixed fight, up in weight class as well. And I think the fact now that he can get back in there, what, 3 or 4 months later, or maybe a little bit more than that even, and, you know, talking to him, he wants to get back and he wants to get out for the Dublin card as well in June. This is a massive fight for James. Like, James, it feels like James's career has been nothing but fucking mishaps for the last few years, and injuries and cancelled events and losses, and everything that kind of could have gone wrong has gone wrong for James. And you just love it, not being biased here or anything, but you just love it for James to get a win and get turned around in 2 months and get another win. I think, you know, go on a real run here. It's a massive time in James Gallagher's career, Graham, isn't it? And this is a huge fight for him.
Yeah, definitely, you know, and obviously he's been fighting kind of abroad, and people have been like, oh, we want to see him in Ireland, and here he is in Belfast. And obviously it was meant to be Jeremy Kennedy, as we mentioned, which would have been, you know, a huge fight, but maybe, you know, potentially mightn't have been so exciting in terms of a matchup. You know, you could see that maybe being a bit of a ground chess match, or, you know, not maybe being exciting for the fans. But obviously he's got a new matchup in terms of Higo, and it's definitely another difficult matchup, but it's one that maybe might produce more fireworks and might produce more exciting moments. And it definitely gives James a big boost up the rankings, and if he is to win it. And on the other side of it, obviously James is a big name, and it would be a big win for Higo as well, and it's been talked about for a long time. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And obviously James had that recent loss to Patchy Mix, but you know, the more that goes on, the more Patchy Mix fights, they kind of the better that, well, you know, obviously a loss is not ideal, but you know, the better the loss looks, if you know what I mean. So yeah, James Gallagher, obviously it's not been ideal, as you mentioned, you know, pullouts and injuries and opponents pulling, all that stuff is definitely not ideal when you want to get in there, you want to make money, you have a short career. But yeah, this is his chance to kind of put all that behind him and kind of get to where he's been talking about getting in terms of, you know, the title picture and making a crack at it. Yeah, 145, like, obviously he's not the biggest 145er, but he's quick. And, you know, if he can get it to the ground here against Higo, you know, Higo's no mug, but you'd have to give James an advantage, especially if James can, you know, we've seen him on people's back and how methodical he is when he gets there. So, yeah, I think for James, you know, set up the takedown and try to work the way to the back as soon as possible. No mess, and get in and out as soon as you can to win here. Because if you mess around with Higo, he has a lot of tools and a lot in his arsenal as well. So yeah, it's a really interesting matchup, and I'm very excited about this one.
Yeah, I really hope it does turn into a ground matchup. Like, Higo has a lot of, I think he's like 13, 14 submission wins or something like that. As I choke to death here, I'm still dealing with this fucking cough. It's absolutely terrible. Anyway, I just hope it hits the ground, because like, I think James, it'll be interesting to see James striking again, because he's been like another few months now out in Thailand, and we'll see how that has turned, because there's definitely signs of improvement over the last while. He's looked a lot better as a striker. We know how good he is on the ground. But going back watching Higo over the last couple of weeks, like, he does like to fight on the outside an awful lot, and he doesn't by any means make it easy for you to look like a good striker. So even if it was a guy who's been striking since he was 5 years of age or whatever, mightn't be able to exactly look like the world's greatest against a guy like him. And then that, you know, that gives you an another issue then. Like, can you get the takedown? Can you get across the cage quick enough? Like, James has been excellent at that. So, like, James is definitely an underrated fighter. There's no shadow of a doubt about that. Again, not necessarily saying he'll win or giving a pick there or anything like that. But, like, his ability to actually get across the cage, close the distance, and take lads down is fantastic. It's really, really, really good. And again, I don't think he gets the credit for it. I'd be very interested to see if he can do that here, if he can do that at the bigger weight class, although, you know, he goes fought down as well, I think, so I don't think there's a massive difference in size or anything like that, but once it gets to the ground, will he have that massive advantage in jiu-jitsu as well, considering, you know, how good Higo is there as well? There's a lot of questions to be answered. Here's a question for you, Graham. I don't know if you've looked at the odds or not. I have them up here in front of me. Who do you think is the favourite for this one?
I'd say it's close. I might go with James, but I have no confidence in that. I don't know. I'll go with James.
I actually looked at it backwards a second ago, but it's -120 for Higo, -110 for James. So they're basically the same. Higo just about the favourite. So I thought that might be a little bit more of a gap, considering.
I don't like guessing odds. Okay, so I'm way off.
Yeah. I often guess them, and I'm way off. But yeah, as my betting picks over last while would suggest as well. But I thought James would be not a sizable underdog for that, but I thought he might be, you know, +150-ish type of range in that. And I'm a little bit surprised on that one. So, you know, maybe that'll change over next while when that scene. But
I think most of the kind of, in Ireland anyway, most of the local bookies don't really put the odds out on these type of shows until, you know, a couple of days before. And we might see money go in and it might swing one way or the other. But yeah, like, it's another fight that it's hard to know how it's going to go and how it's going to look. And obviously, you know, the crowd will be behind James and all that stuff. But as we mentioned with the Carl fight, but yeah, I think if I had to guess, I might think that late money might come in on Higo. You know, as you said, a lot of people underrate James and maybe took a disliking to him very early on in his career when he was like 16 or 17 years old, and have kind of kept that grudge and, you know, were very quickly to say he was terrible when he lost to Patchy Mix or whatever, all that stuff. You know how it is these days. But yeah, I think, you know, it's a pick and fight. And yeah, is this the moment that James Gallagher kind of, you know, proves everybody wrong and has a massive win and overcomes adversity and comes back from injuries and, you know, puts himself in the picture? Or is Higo going to, you know, put a big dampener on the crowd and then we're going to sit through three non-Irish fights and wait for Carl Moore? So, yeah, I think in terms of the crowd's enjoyment of the event, they kind of need a James Gallagher performance here.
Yeah, it's a massive, absolutely massive altogether. Myself and you actually have like a breakdown of this card coming out during the week over on Sherdog as well, and I'm sure we'll have more here on Patreon as well. But one or two more fights I just want to quickly touch on. Look, the co-main event for the 145-pound title, Patricio Pitbull against Jeremy Kennedy. It's a massive fight, I think, for the division, because, like, we know what happened to Patricio over the last while. He's lost a couple of fights, you know, down in weight and then outside of the promotion. Jeremy Kennedy's been on, I suppose, a great run. He looks like an unbelievable wrestler. Patricio's style, I suppose, has been built to beat guys like like Jeremy Kennedy, if you want to say that, where he kind of stands and is very kind of loose. But loose is the wrong word, I suppose. Loose in terms of where he stands, but very wooden in terms of the way he stands. And he just kind of moves and pivots off the one area. And he usually pivots in a way that he can punch you from, and you can very rarely get near him. But can he continue to do that after a couple of losses, where he's a little bit older now and against a guy as good as Jeremy Kennedy, you know, coming out of Extreme Couture as well, a gym who's, you know, been a bit hot and cold, I suppose, over the last while, but a lot of guys around his weight class and he himself have been very, very good in that time. It feels like maybe a sliding doors moment here, that it might be Jeremy Kennedy's time to take the title off of Patricio, considering what's happened to him over over the last while. Like, either way, you look at Patricio, 42 fights into his career at 36 years of age at 145 pounds. It's hard to see him holding that title for much longer, even if it's not the Jeremy Kennedy fight. I think I'm going to pick Jeremy, Graham. How do you see this one going?
Yeah, well, you know, Pitbull's definitely, you know, dangerous on the feet and has an advantage on the feet here. But Jeremy Kennedy is relentless with chaining his wrestling together and getting himself into a dominant position. And, you know, he's positioned over submission a lot of the time, and will make it a difficult fight and try and grind you. And if Pitbull can't get his strikes off early and, you know, land something significant, the likelihood is he's probably going to get taken down and frustrated. And, you know, the more success Jeremy has with the takedowns, the more he's going to go for it. And, you know, the kind of style he has, even if he doesn't, he's going to keep going for that grappling sequences and those takedowns. So, yeah, I think if Pitbull is going to get it done, he's going to have to, you know, land shots and avoid takedowns early. And if we do see him getting takedown early, then I reckon we're going to see that for the rest of the rounds.
Yeah, 100%. And it's a very good fight and an interesting, as I said, sliding doors, maybe changing at a guard type of moment there. Or maybe not. Maybe Patricio holds onto it. Funny thing, the rest of this card, apart from James and Carl, there's only three Irish guys on the card, and that's kind of mad. Like Kieran Clark and the two Nathan Kellys. You'd think there would have been a lot more, but no, there isn't.
Well, they tried to put Leah and Sinead on, in fairness.
But still, like, where's Brian Moore? Where's all the rest of them? You know, that would usually be on it. And yeah, that's I suppose a little bit unfortunate, but I suppose this Dublin card is upcoming as well, so I'm sure a lot of them will be on that. You touched on the Kieran Clark fight, like the two Nathan Kelly fights, the young Nathan Kelly fight, an amateur fight against Jordan Elliott. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to seeing that. And like Nathan Kelly, who headlined the last card, is in against Vikas Singh Rahul, who's a good fighter. I watched a bit of him. I think it's a good test. Again, Nathan Kelly, 11 fights into his career, to keep rising like that, I think there's no harm taking those sort of fights and rising. For Kieran Clark, it feels like it's almost the opposite for him. He's fighting a 4-1 guy. I watched a bit of him. Like, he's not a bad fighter, but you're 8-0 Kieran Clark at this stage. For Nathan, he's had the opportunity in the kind of the contender series that they have over there. He's headlined the card. I think a lot of people maybe know where Nathan is going. Like, maybe he'll be in one of these big tournaments in the next while, but he said himself he's happy enough to get the experience and go. It feels like Kieran Clark needed that move now. Like, he needed a big fight now. He needed to be in a European tournament or a world tournament or something now. And he's fighting a 4-1 guy instead. And I don't know. It feels wrong. Like, maybe he'll have a big fight in Dublin and no one will even remember this and it'll be all good. But it's probably a more dangerous fight than it should be as well against the 4-1 guy. I do think he will win. But
why do you think Bellator or PFL or whoever the brass are doing this? You know, from what Kieran Clark has been saying, and, you know, he was on the old triangle as well there with the lads. And it seems from everything I know about Kieran and what he was saying that he's, you know, accepting any opponents they offer him. Why do you think they're kind of... You know, I'm always one for take it slowly and build up, but why do you think they're being super slow with him? Do you think it's just so much going on in the background that they're just, you know, they got an opponent, they threw it together, or do you think there's some kind of other reason why they're kind of slow-balling?
Like, a few of Kieran Clark's fights recently have been... You know, he had a big shot. He had to kind of come back. It was tough. He maybe made it look hard. But we also have to remember a lot of his fights... What was it, three of his fucking last four fights, something like that, changed on fight week or coming into it. And, like, that's not easy to do that at all. And he's come through all of those fights, and I think he's looked better every time. My reasoning behind a lot of this, and I was thinking about it again, because I talked about this a couple of times now, like, I would like just to see him get a bit of structure, to know who he's... Like, the last day, right, we watched the European series a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about it. Skitizi, right, good example. He won his fight, and that night, he knew he was fighting next. He knew where he was fighting next. That's what Kieran Clark needs, it feels like. He needs an opponent for a fucking 6 weeks' time. He needs another opponent for 6 weeks' time after that to be ready to go. Because, like, you look at Kieran Clark, he's not a guy who's out of the gym. He's not a guy who's out in Lanzarote, you know, out of Liverpool away matches every 2 weeks, drinking with his buddies, going to the Formula One and all that. He is in the gym fucking training, ready to fight. And I just think, and even like, even if he was to take a loss at this stage of his career, he's not the type of guy who's just going to give up and like continue to lose or anything like that. I just think he is, you look at him and he's a guy who's ready for a bit of movement in his career. And I think that's it more than anything else. Rather, like, I'm not asking for him to be thrown at the deep end or get a title shot or anything like that, far from it. But I think he would have been perfect for a European tournament, for a big fight against, you know, against someone with a name. Like, we talked about, was it Magomed Sharipov, the last day, who's similar sort of record, tough fighter as well. Not like a fight he'd probably be a big underdog for, but the type of fight that would serve him well, that would show him the level. And look, if he lost, he was 8-1, and two fights time, he'd be 10-1. Like, not a big deal either. But yeah, I don't know. Sometimes you just feel a guy is ready and they're at that time where they need to take that step. And I feel like Kieran Clark is there. But anyway, hopefully.
Yeah. Having said all that, and yeah, I agree with a lot of what you were saying, all of what you were saying. You know, this guy, Maffey, not to write him off completely, you know, his only loss is to Ali Taleb in the PFL playoffs.
Yeah, he's not a bad fighter at all. Yeah, he's a good fighter.
You know, he's undefeated as an amateur over five fights, and his only loss was to Ali Taleb. But, you know, he's been fighting guys maybe besides Ali Taleb, who's obviously you know, an undefeated prospect at the time. He's been fighting guys with, you know, negative or low records. So it's definitely a step up. But yeah, it's more in terms of the name value and the kind of, you know, the progression up the ladder that I'm looking at. Nothing, you know, against Maffey. But 100%. Yeah, you know, obviously we're looking at it more from an Irish perspective. So that's why we're kind of, you know.
Yeah, and like,
from Clark's perspective.
That's not, yeah, 100%. You're totally right. And not to say it won't be a good fight either. It just kind of doesn't make sense for me at the moment. But anyway, we'll move on. This card is really good. Tafiq Masayev against Alfie Davis. I really like that fight as well. I think that's going to be three rounds of war there. Luke Trainer against Grant Neal is a very good fight as well. Jordan Newman, 6-0.
Fabian Edwards, I saw your interview with him in the back of the car. And
oh God, that was a nightmare, that one.
One thing that kind of, I don't know if it was what I want to hear from him, was
the training camp thing, was it?
Yeah.
I thought that was odd.
I don't know if you want to kind of the interview out yet?
Yeah, it is out. So what he basically said was that he doesn't do a pre-training camp anymore. He just goes in and tries to lose his weight, like, in camp. When I heard that, I was kind of red flags. Were you the same? Was that what you were reaction to?
Yeah, that was like, you know, I don't know if that's ideal, but obviously, you know, we just kind of know what we hear is kind of the standard practice, and maybe for certain guys it is better, you know, certain things work for certain guys. And another thing he was saying, maybe that you were kind of asking him about letting his game go, and he was saying maybe he needs to pull back on that a little bit. I don't know if he said it in so many words, but I was kind of getting that vibe from him that maybe he might be going back to being a little bit less output or aggressive, being a bit more picky about when he strikes, which, you know, in the past has maybe led to some decisions going against him that maybe he should have won. So I don't know, like, a couple of things there where I'm like, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but maybe a couple of things there that aren't ideal to hear.
Yeah, and he's fighting a guy in Aaron Jeffrey as well, like, who's a good wrestler who you're going to have to take those chances against. I feel like the Austin Vanderford fight, even though I thought he won that fight, to be honest, I think, like, if you're a little bit more aggressive against guys like that, land a few more shots, you're going to, you know, you're going to beat them. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it works out. I'm glad the two of us are thinking the same way. I thought exactly the same. Now, maybe we're both wrong, and it's positives instead of negatives, but it sounded a tad negative to me, I suppose. But we'll see how
maybe, because we've been talking about this kind of thing about Fabian for so many years, that's coming into our head, and it's completely not in his head. But yeah,
maybe he's listening to me in the podcast and going, I'm gonna fucking show that lad now that he's wrong the whole time. So that could happen too. But yeah, very good card, and if you're thinking of going along, you should. You absolutely should. So, Bellator, Belfast. There you go. We're not going to do a massive recap of the weekend because there wasn't a whole load over the weekend. But one or two things I definitely wanted to mention. I have to talk about Luke Riley from Cage Warriors, first of all. I thought it was an absolutely phenomenal display from him against Jonathan DeJesus to win a unanimous decision over three rounds. Like, I watched a good bit of DeJesus, and we've seen him on Bellator cards before, but I thought he was a really tough matchup for Luke Riley, like fighting on the outside, picking guys off. But Luke Riley showed a completely different side to him, that he's able to get technical and beat a more technical guy like rather easily, like apart from maybe the last minute or two where he kind of got tired. And that's a thing as well, like nine fights into her career, you'll probably get better at, you'll add more cardio onto it. You'll probably watch that back and go, oh, Jesus, you know, I need to adjust something there, and he will adjust it. But I think from like the technical point of view, for a guy who, especially, it's usually the other way around, right? Usually a guy who's 8-0 has shown like, oh, this guy's a good technical fighter. Now we need to kind of see him in a war. We need to see him get beat up a bit. He has done that many times. He's already proven that, you know, in there. I was so impressed with this technical display from Luke Riley. Here, Graham, I think he's the best guy to come out of that gym yet. I think he's better than Paddy and Molly and all of them. I really do.
He looked really good. It's definitely a progression, as you mentioned, and it's like a, you know, appropriate kind of matchup and stepping up against a guy with, you know, a lot of experience and a positive record, and, you know, going in there and, you know, as you said, he won probably quite dominantly, but he didn't have it all his own way. He had to show things that, you know, maybe we hadn't seen him show before. And yeah, he looked smooth, you know. He looked to be able to transition very well between the aspects of MMA, or the basis of MMA. And, you know, he's definitely one to watch for the future, you know. As you said, maybe, you know, in the third round, he maybe slowed down a little bit, or, you know, when you're two rounds up, maybe that was, you know, if he had to win that round, he had another gear. I believe he probably did have another gear if he needed one. But yeah, 9-0 now, like, you know, I'd be very interested to see who Ian Dean wants to put him up against next, and will he kind of, you know, catapult him into the title picture, or who Ian Dean comes up with to match him up against next.
Yeah,
you know, we might even see him with a quick turnaround. We might even see him on a Dublin card. You never know.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I'd love to see him on that card. He's 9-0. We know the UFC love undefeated records. You could absolutely see him maybe on a UFC card. Contender Series must be coming back here soon as well now, so I could absolutely see him there before he even gets to a Cage Warriors title. But it has to be, like, I think it's 100% a Cage Warriors title next for Luke Riley. And he has, like, when, do you know, we often say, we go, oh, like, we look at a fighter and go, say, like, Lee Hammond, right? I've said it a few times now. Lee Hammond needs Ian Dean, right? If at this stage of his career, give him to Ian Dean for 5 or 6 fights, and he will bring Lee Hammond to where he needs to be. This is the perfect example. Like, the fights that he's given Luke Riley, I thought this was maybe a step up too far too soon, but no, what it did was it showed a different part of Luke Riley and a better part of him. Like, this fight made Luke Riley a better fighter. And the fights before showed Luke Riley in a different light that he had to get through that made him a better fighter too. Like, Ian Dean is so good at doing his job. Unbelievable. And I don't know where that point is going. But anyway, he's brought Luke Riley to a place where I think he's ready. Like, he's ready for that opportunity right now. And yeah, it's exciting. I like...
Have Cage Warriors got a Liverpool card coming up anytime soon?
Yeah, Jesus, if they had, it'd be absolutely ideal. And yeah, he should be headlining if they do, 100%. Outside of that, there was the two title fights. Andy Clamp, you know, underdog win against Matthew Byfield, looked really, really good there. And Liam Gittins as well. Jeez, you can't, right? Liam Gittins off the 5th round finish against Roberto Hernandez, who for me was a very tough matchup as well. I got all my picks wrong, so what do I know? But still, it was a tough matchup. Like, Liam Gittins is so relentless, and like, he's... I keep mentioning the pace that he fights with. It's just absolutely phenomenal that he can fight such an even pace. It's like, this is a weird thing to say, right? It's easy to fight a slow pace, or it's easy to fight a fast pace. But it's not easy to do either of them for the long period. But it's very hard to fight. It's like, he's like a marathon runner or something, you know? You fight this, or you go the same even pace throughout the whole contest. And I don't know, is there a fighter in the world as good as he is? Honestly, I think other fighters should watch him and see the way he fights and the pace at which he fights. It's absolutely phenomenal. But anything from Cage Warriors stick out for you, Graham?
Obviously, your boy, Power. You forgot to mention him, James Power.
He was good. I was just about to choke the net there. Sorry, I just had to.
Roca looked pretty good. Like, he had some good straight punches on him, and he tagged Power a few times, but Power just kind of got in his face and made it a bit dirty on the feet and just kind of, you know, threw the big haymakers and got the job done. You know, I thought he won every round, but there was close rounds in there, and, you know, there were stages where he did get cracked, and he just kept coming forward and just kept pressuring, and, you know, that's what you got to do sometimes. You got to just bite down on the gum shield and, you know, make it happen. And, you know, it probably wasn't the cleanest performance of James Power's career, but, you know, he got the you know, decisive decision onto the next one. But yeah, I think Roca had a good show as well.
Yeah, no doubt, a shadow of a doubt. No doubt about, like, James Power, after coming back from a loss in his last fight as well, it'd be very, you know, it'd been very easy to lose this sort of fight. But as you said, he didn't. He got through the rounds, and his opponent is a very, very good fighter as well. And yeah, I still, you know, even though he's lost the fight, I wouldn't write him off as a good prospect in any way, shape, or form at all. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he does next. And 167, then, like, we're going to talk in here in a second about the 170-pound title picture, but, you know, Stefano Paterno is definitely back in that. The former champ, the guy who was just in Octagon, went in there in a round and finished off Stockman. The last champ, O'Meal Brown, he beat Rafael Aronov, and, you know, the current champ, I suppose, Giannis Bichar, has now gone into Tough. So this is a massive opportunity for this division. Just one or two other things just to mention there. Teddy Stringer goes to 3-0 now. I know our guy Harry Powell has talked an awful lot about him. He's a right good prospect there. Michelle and Martignoni back with a win as well, as was Connor Wilson. So good night for, and good weekend for Cage Warriors, all told. But as we flash forward, Graham, here to Cage Warriors 170, we'll be talking a lot more about it. It's it's only, less than a month away now. Big news. Well, big news for Paul Hughes, which we'll talk about in a second. But big news as well for James Sheehan. He's going to be fighting for the interim title. And I suppose we kind of speculated about it last week, but here it is, and he's getting this opportunity. Massive opportunity, isn't it, Graham, for him? Massive opportunity for Team Rhino as well. And much, much deserved. You know, he's a guy who's put his effort into it, taking his losses, coming back. A huge fight, isn't it? Can't wait for this one.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a guy who takes on all comers, like everybody always says it, and, you know, he definitely does it. Look at his record, look at his losses, you know, guys that are in the UFC, guys who are undefeated in the UFC. So, yeah, like, it stands to you when you've had those experiences and you've gone rounds with these guys, and, you know, you can go back to the gym and work on these things and make yourself a better fighter. And James seems to be a really down-to-earth guy from every interview I've seen or every interaction I've had with him and all that. So, you know, he seems to be laser focused on this and becoming the best fighter he can. And this is a huge opportunity for him. As you mentioned, obviously it's in front of a home crowd. As you mentioned, it's a big moment for Team Rhino, a big moment for him. You know, it's a big card now, you know, especially now that Paul Hughes has been added to the card. It adds a verve to it, and it definitely has more eyeballs on it now than maybe it would have before. So yeah, it's doesn't change anything that James got to do in the cage, but we've been watching him for a long time. He's a very difficult matchup for anybody in that division. Yeah, and, you know, there's probably going to be close rounds like there always is in Sheehan fights, but I'm hoping, and I think he will you know, get the job done, maybe by decision.
Yeah, 100%. Like, we'll obviously break down that fight in a couple of weeks' time, and we'll break down the Paul Hughes fight. But to have two Irish guys in, the Paul Hughes one isn't the title fight, I think, but we can basically call it, you know, in a double main event.
It's probably not a title fight because I think, you know, clauses start kicking in if you're the champion and all that.
100%. But to have, like, two of the best prospects in Ireland, like, one of them fighting for a title and one of them, you know, we all know what Paul Hughes is. It's absolutely fantastic. And, like, some of these Cage Warriors guys, I suppose, they come close to maybe not having that. And it's tough because, you know, the last time they came, they had, you know, or over the last few times, you know, they had Ian Garry, obviously, and they had Reese McKee, and they had Caelan Lochran and all of that, and they had Paul Hughes. But, like, you know, the turnover of the next guys, a lot of the Team KF guys, you know, they just didn't take that next step. And, you know, the Shelleys and that, I think they probably would have been in this position, but they just, as I said, they didn't take that step. So to have Paul Hughes and to have James Sheehan, who has, I suppose, taken the step, it's good and it's great that the Cage Warriors brass have given him that opportunity as well. And it's, you know, it's an event, I suppose, and like Ian Dean always says, it's one in a few years' time. You'll tell people, 10,000 people will be telling people that they saw Paul Hughes or whatever fighting in that big fight in that arena. So I it's brilliant that, you know, we can have the big Bellator Dublin card, Belfast card, then a big Bellator Dublin card and a big Cage Warriors card as well, and have a lot of Irish talent showcased on it, a lot of top Irish talent as well in main event type of fights. It's absolutely fantastic, you know. And like, looking, there's a lot of Irish booked on this card as well. Like, it's great to see Eimear D'Arcy, who is the de facto Irish amateur female fighter of the year from last year. You know, Adam Shelley is back on this card as well. Jordan O'Neill is on it. Deki McAleenan, Takamandu, Solomon Simon, Sinead Nolan, Ger Harris, Scott Harvey, Matthew Elliott, loads more as well. It's absolutely, Kieran Brady is on this card as well, making his debut. You know, it's absolutely brilliant to see, and look, we'll be talking a lot more about it in the coming weeks, but great to have so much to look forward to in Irish MMA and beyond as well. So very good, very good.
Absolutely. You know, a Rhino title shot on a Paul Hughes, you know, what you'd nearly be certain, even though we've said this for probably about 2 years, would be his last fight before the UFC. You know, this is definitely has a bit of specialness to the card. And, you know, as you mentioned, Jer Harris, you know, Solomon Simon, these kind of guys who are Scott Harvey, these kind of guys who are, you know, starting out their pro careers and trying to get to the next level. And, you know, those are guys that if you haven't been following them, now's a good time to jump on their journeys. And, you know, Cage Warriors is, you know, a staple of Irish MMA for a lot of years. And yeah, I think this is a great card. And, you know, even Deki McAleenan, you know, has he ever been in a boring fight?
Never.
Not that I can remember. You know what I mean? So there's some absolute deadly scraps on this card. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
So UFC last weekend, not again, terrible card on paper, and it didn't really deliver much. This Tybura Tuivasa fight, I thought it could have been you know, maybe a fight that dragged out a little bit longer, maybe we could have seen something, but both of them just kind of went for it, and were like, look, this is ending in the first round, whether I win or lose. And that was that. And Tuivasa kind of went for him. Tybura got the fight to the ground, and he choked him out. That was kind of that. What do you think of it, Graham? Anything more to add than that? Not.
Yeah, I also thought it was going to be, I thought it might even go to a really sloppy decision, but yeah, Tuivasa, he looked like he was okay, and originally in the choke, he looked like he was finished, yeah. And then it looked like he was actually okay, and then I don't know if he went to sleep for a second or if he tapped, but yeah, it wasn't you know, anything to write home about that main event.
I thought he was going to get up complaining. Did you? Like, I felt like he wasn't out, and yeah,
it was a bit of a weird one. Like, I didn't see a tap, but maybe his eyes rolled in his head or something. I'm not sure exactly what happened, but the fact that he didn't complain would make me think maybe that he might have went out for a split second.
Yeah, or there might have been a bit of a tap or something. But yeah, not a big deal there. And look, both of them will move on. One will probably fight the number 11. One will probably fight the number 13 or get cut, or who cares. What do you think of this Brian Battle Angelusa?
It's hard to argue with what Brian Battle was saying afterwards, that he, you know, Lusa was quick to not wait the 5 minutes and to say you can't see and get out of there, because it wasn't looking good for him. But at the same time, even though, you know, I do think he hammed it up, I think it is like a pretty, you know, a smart move if it's that easy to, you know, get yourself out of there without a loss in your record. You know, obviously poked in the eye is Brian Battle's fault, and it was a poke in the eye, there's no doubt about that. You know, being poked in the eye is horrible, nobody wants to get poked in the eye, but if you wanted to stay in there, you're going to take the 5 minutes, you're going to, you know, blink it out, you're going to, you know, do your best to, you know, get yourself in a position to get back in there, and you're probably, most fighters are probably going to lie and say they're grand, even if they're not. So yeah, I do think Brian Battle was right, but at the same time, I do think Lusa, you know, if that kind of loophole in the rules is there, and you know, the fight seems to be only going one way, and you're kind of, you know, you can't get into the range, you can't really get anything going. You get poked in the eye. You know, if you say you can't see, then you're gonna get a no contest. So yeah, it's not ideal, but it kind of makes sense why you would do that if you were a loser.
Yeah, like it might have been a bit of panic too. Like it's hard to look at that and not say he looked for a way out, even if that's not the case. And like yeah, it probably
if it was
isn't
4 minutes 50 seconds and the ref says, "Here, you need to tell me now, can you see?" and he says, "I can't," then okay, yeah, maybe. But like, you know, when you're only 2 minutes in or less, and if you wanted to stay in the fight, you'd be like, give me my time, or give me that cloth again there, and let me blink it out. Let me, you know, try and sort it here. But
It was weird as well, like when they showed the first replay and he opened his eye, like it's hard to remember an eye as opened as that from an eye poke. Like it felt like it was below the eye. Now that's not to say he didn't have double vision or couldn't see out of it or whatever. Like I wouldn't call him a liar or anything like that. It just looked very bad, but look, whatever, that's what happened. Brian Battle didn't come out like, "Oh, everyone's afraid of me, no one wants to fight me." I'm like, alright, okay mate, yeah. But yeah,
I enjoyed his calling out of Lucido and them shouting at each other and all. I'll kill funny. You and all that. Yeah, that was it's like when you could have fought on if you wanted to kill him.
Yeah, I did enjoy that bit, but yeah, that was good. Anyway, we'd OSP fighting one-handedly again against Kennedy and Jukwu, and winning.
And what a one hand.
what a left hand, what a wand. I actually, do you know what? I started counting because I was so bored, how many left hands and right hands he threw. And I think I picked like a terrible. The second round, he actually did throw a good few right hands, but I fully maintain he throws like 90% left hands in his fights.
Did he look like, I don't know, it was just me because I had money on to win by decision, but did he look like he was kind of sliding all over the place? Like
he's always like that.
I don't know. But
always
a little bit off balance sometimes, but especially like as the fight went on yesterday, I was like, what is going on here? It's like, is he going to fall over of his own accord here?
Yeah, I've always seen that in him. Yeah, he does that, but he's an odd, like I've said this before, right? OSP is the best bad fighter in the UFC. Like himself and Derek Lewis are pound for pound number one and two, but I genuinely think in the history of the UFC, in the history of the modern UFC, he's the best bad fighter. Kennedy and Jukwu was probably up there as well, to be honest. But
you know, you think if you're going in against Kennedy, you're probably thinking there, let me try and mix in some takedowns. And I think at one stage he did kind of like fake a couple of like kind of half fake takedowns or half quarter commit to takedowns, but just to kind of keep Kennedy thinking. But yeah, like even though he ended up winning, you know, if he had mixed in a couple of like actual takedown attempts there, he might have had a little bit of an easier route to victory.
Yeah. Yeah, who cares? Then people were giving out about the Christian Rodriguez, Doug Ligarian one. This is one where there was two unanimous 10-8s the opposite way, and then they were split in the middle round. I didn't see too much wrong. Like it kind of.
Did you not think the first one was a 10-8? The first one was given a 10-8, yeah?
Yeah, the first and the third were both given 10-8s.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
So it was the second that was split, I think. So, yeah, fair play to him. And then Macy Chison, Gerald Mershart, Mike Davis all got submission wins there. And other things also happened on that card. Fair play to everyone involved. God bless y'all. What's next week, Graham, in the UFC? Let's hear. Let's pull it up. And Rose Namajunas versus Amanda Ribas. That's not a bad, fight. And other than that, fuck all. Who cares? Right, we leave it there.
Fuck all. Who cares? By three times.
There's not a Muhammad Usman against Mick Parker. Oh, that's an interesting fight, actually. I'll watch that. But yeah, no one cares.
Yeah, you know. I don't know. These is this another Apex one? I think it is. Is it?
Let me look at it here. It indeed is. Yeah. Mm. So we'll have Belfast to talk about next week anyway. So we don't even like. I barely watched that fight last night. I fell asleep in the middle of it. I woke up like went back and watched a little bit. Like who cares? No one's watching these. No one gives a shit about these fucking fights. Like.
Really? Well, people who are degenerate gamblers do, Sean.
Yeah, that's it. That's literally, literally the only people who cares about him. Like, and it's bad because, like, I'm sure some of those fighters are good prospects and all, but they just get lost in the mix and it's impossible to keep up with them all. Like, it's hard enough to tell what a good prospect is, let's say, in cage warriors and all of that, you know, because there's a lot of people there. But, like, in UFC where there's fucking, you know, like 300 prospects coming through now, it's just impossible to keep up with them all. Like, and it's... Yeah, anyway, we don't want to be given out about that again. Because
like, that main event is a good main event, but just you need at least one more, if not two more, like fights with actual, like, you know, ranking repercussions at least, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who cares? Who cares? Anyway, we leave it there. Graham, see us out with your quote for the week.
I never saw it as a start. It's more a change of heart.
Was that Klopp talking about leaving us? Is that it?
No, it's the day we caught the train, but I could have seen.
Ah, lovely. All right, everyone. We leave it there. See you all next week. Good luck.